Hey, welcome in to the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. What a weekend it was in the world of sports. We got a lot to get to today here on the program. Joe Rex Road, welcome back on this Monday morning. How are you?
Thanks. Amazing.
Sure you are. Sounds like you're doing great. Michelle, what's going on with you?
Long weekend, but it's going to be a good week. It's going to be a good week. So I'm doing great today. Thanks, Rob.
No problem. There is a cause for celebration day. Preseason football is over. So thank God. Got my last little fill of that over the weekend until next year. Going to be an interesting next 24 hours or so, 24, 30 hours before the Titans have to make their cuts by 3 o'clock tomorrow. So roster will be down to 53 tomorrow. We'll get to that throughout the show today. Going to be some pretty interesting decisions that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel and the Titans have to make. Interesting weekend of college football as well. How about Vanderbilt? 63-10, the final score over the weekend. They thrashed Hawaii. It was, Joe, was a game that started off pretty rough for Vanderbilt. They gave up a touchdown on their first drive defensively, and it was a game also where, you know, the first couple of possessions offensively did not look great for Vanderbilt. And then the turning point of the game was a scoop and score for Vanderbilt defensively to make it 14-7. And really after that, it was all she wrote for Hawaii. Vanderbilt totally dominated after that.
Yeah, you know, rushing for 400-plus in a game. You know, you're not going to see that too much this year. But I thought the offensive line was really good, and the Vanderbilt skill is good on offense. You know, Mike Wright, I thought, had a good all-around game. I want to say, did I call that shot? I think I called that shot.
I think you did.
The two touchdowns rushing, yep. two passing, I think I did. Am I? Yeah. So, but then the defense, that was the part that I was, I guess, probably more impressed with. Was that defensively they were very good.
Yeah, and it was a rough start defensively. Hawaii just basically ran down the field on them, and then all of a sudden before you turn around, it's 7-0 Hawaii in that game, and I know I was just sitting there thinking, man, is this going to happen again on their opening game this year? But just total domination, 63-10, the final score by Vanderbilt. I mean, look, Mike Wright looked pretty good in that game. They ran the ball basically at will. In that game, he had some big throws in the game too. So, I mean, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, and I know there were several that went down there for the game in Hawaii, like, you got to be feeling pretty good today. I mean, we talked about this on Friday. I think you had them going 3-9 this year. I'm at 4-8. I mean, I'm not moving off that based on the win. And I do wonder how much of this is Vanderbilt and how much of it is what the current state of that Hawaii program is right now. But 63-10 is 63-10. I don't really care what it is for Vanderbilt at this point. If you're Clark Lee, that's got to be a pretty good feeling to begin the season to win. Not only, you know, just to get the win, but the margin in which you got it. That's got to feel good for Vanderbilt fans today.
Yeah, they don't beat anybody 63-10 last year or the year before. You know, I don't care who they're playing. So, yeah, Hawaii is rough for sure, but no, this means something. This is a much better team. They need guys to come back on that D line. But I liked the back seven a lot on defense. I think they actually have some playmakers back there. And I like their running backs too, you know, and the offensive line. I think in a lot of games this year they're gonna have some success running, and the offensive scheme was very, I thought, creative. I think Joey Lynch has done a nice job of putting an offense around Mike Wright, and I think it's going to be fun to watch.
I think it is, too. We'll get back into Vanderbilt coming up later in the show in the 7 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that. Joe, maybe the easiest money over the weekend in college football, poor Scott Frost and Nebraska. When I saw the line heading into the game Saturday was Northwestern plus 11.5, I was really tempted to take, you know, Northwestern outright, and I should have done it in retrospect. But the plus 11.5 was basically the easiest bet I think I've ever made in my entire life. And Northwestern in Ireland takes down Nebraska over the weekend. And the noise that was already pretty loud on Scott Frost heading into the year. Ooh, it's I have a feeling it's not going to end very well for Scott Frost this year.
Yeah, it's crazy, honestly, how this keeps happening. And I think that's is that eight in a row?
Eight in a row.
7 points or less?
Yep.
Yeah, so seven of them last year, and now you start this year with another one. And, you know, so, like, they're not – you look at it and say, hey, they're not far. But, yeah, I think he was already on thin ice, and he's going to have a heck of a turnaround to keep that job, which is crazy because I thought he would at least stabilize things and get them back to a place of being decent. But Nebraska and Tennessee are kind of been viewed the same as far as, you know, great programs that have fallen on hard times, but it's a much tougher job to get Nebraska back anymore in today's college football.
Well, you could see it coming throughout the whole game on Saturday. Like Nebraska, I mean, even when they were in the lead, as that game went on and Northwestern was just hanging around and hanging around and hanging around, all of a sudden, you know, things shifted in that game. And man, he's that Nebraska fan base right now. They are upset with Scott Frost. And, you know, I'm not saying he can't turn it around this year, but at some point as a program, it just kind of feels like you're fighting an uphill battle, and it feels like Scott Frost is there. I don't know that I see him getting out of this unscathed. It was impressive that he threw his coaches directly under the bus after the game, though. That was awesome.
What I missed that. What he
basically said? He said his offensive staff's gonna have to get a little bit more creative.
Like, yeah. All right. I saw that. Right. Yeah. Well, this is one big difference between the NFL and college football is that, you know, in the NFL, I mean, you're as a coach, it's a separate job from the GM, and you know, you're kind of like people can look at it and say, okay, here's what you have. What do you do with what you have? And if you're bad, you know, you can get out of it with better players and all that. But when negativity starts swirling around a program in college football, because recruiting is part of the job, it just becomes so difficult to survive that. And of course, Tennessee, you know, we've seen this recently with Tennessee and multiple coaches. It happens all over the place. I mean, look at Auburn right now. I mean, it's very hard once you start going down that road to turn it around. He needed badly to get this win to at least give himself a chance this year.
Yeah, I mean, and just off to a rough start on that front. So an exciting week zero of college football, and then the real thing beginning this weekend as well. Everybody in action coming up either this weekend or on Thursday night as well in the case of the Tennessee Vols. So we'll get into that a little bit later in the show as well. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ron on the text line says, good morning, guys. I have to say, after watching the game Saturday night, two songs come to mind, A Flock of Seagulls, I Ran for Malik Willis, and Glenn Frey, The Heat is On for J-Rob and Mike on having to make some big decisions this week. So Ron taking a bit of a musical tune for the Titans heading into this Monday morning.
Did you just say Glenn Frey?
That's what it says on the text line. I didn't realize what he was trying to say until halfway through.
Glenn Frey, Eagles legend. Yeah. Detroit, by the way. And very, very nice, Ron. Very nice. Yeah, Malik Willis, getting better. No more games. But, you know, I feel like Malik Willis, I think we saw some progress, right?
Oh, for sure. I thought that was definitely his best game.
So now it's going to be really, really interesting in terms of the quarterback roster situation. Really interesting. I don't know that I'd feel fine just going with Malik Willis as QB2, but I'm not ruling that out.
Hey, that was a heck of a final drive by Logan Woodside, though. Vrabel called it. The word that Vrabel used was fantastic. Vrabel was very pleased with that last drive.
I mean, it's not bad for him to do that, you know, for his sake. It's not bad for him to do that. I still think I'm forced to guess right now. I'm going to guess him as QB2. But I definitely don't feel nearly as confident in that as I did a few weeks ago.
Well, Malik Willis played not the whole game, but he played, what, three and a half quarters of that game for the Titans over the weekend. So he got a pretty good look at Malik Willis. I mean, obviously, he had some big plays running the football in that game. He had a couple of really good throws. I mean, the touchdown pass to Burks, and there's the, you know, that angle that's out there all over social media of basically where he releases the ball, almost sidearm. It's a heck of a throw. And I've said it, there have been moments in all three of those games in the preseason where you look at Malik Willis and you say, okay, I understand why they drafted him. I mean, he's got incredible ability. And whether or not he's ever going to be able to put all of it together and be a really good starting quarterback in the NFL, I don't know. But, Joe, I think the most encouraging thing about Malik Willis is I thought he got better in every game, and by far I thought his last game was the best game that he's played. So there has been, I think, continuous improvement on the Malik Willis front, which is good to see.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, he has gotten better. We've talked about the ability is there, the approach, the personality. I think he can be a leader of a football team. My biggest thing, and this is where I'm still skeptical about it going all the way to where people hope, is just, is he going to get the accuracy down? I mean, Josh Allen is an outlier to me, and I just take away the you know, get the ball out quick and all this, you know, all this stuff, all the work that's still ahead on reading defense and everything. I think that is going to be fine, but is he going to be able to control that accuracy consistently? Because I think it is hard for players at this age, for quarterbacks at this age, to improve that a ton. Josh Allen did, by all appearances, like dramatically. But will Malik Willis be able to do that? If he can, then I think it's going to be very interesting moving forward.
We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Row, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Titans coming up next, welcoming your thoughts all show long. This is Robbie and Rex Row, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Your backup quarterback in regards to Malik?
You know, I think we'll get to the roster probably later in the week, Teresa, but I appreciate the quarterback play that we got from both guys last night. You know, Malik did some things that were really encouraging that we had talked about, you know, his ability to step up into the pocket, kept his eyes downfield at times, also was able to have some explosive gains running, which is exactly what we talked about. The operation was better, but, you know, then there's some things we have to improve. And then, you know, we had two-minute drives that we scored on, one with Malik, and then Logan came in and, you know, had a great drive and you know, did a nice job and helped us score a touchdown there late.
That was Mike Vrabel on the backup quarterback battle between Malik Willis and Logan Woodside. Titans win 26-23 on Saturday night to close out the preseason with a 2-1 record. Malik Willis with finishing 15 of 23 with 131 yards, one touchdown, one interception as well that was basically tipped in the air at the line of scrimmage. So one touchdown, one pick for Malik Willis. He also had four carries for 79 yards, including a 50-yard run as well. Logan Woodside, 5 of 9 in basically one drive on Saturday night for 43 yards and also ran in the game-winning touchdown as well. So some good moments by both quarterbacks. You know, 15 of 23 for 131, a touchdown and a pick. I mean, they got a good long look at Malik Willis on Saturday. You're hoping, if you're the Titans, I would assume, that that's probably the last long look at Malik Willis you get in a game setting for the remainder of the year, and that Ryan Tannehill can stay healthy. But do you think that the Titans, as we sit here today, heading into this week, have seen enough out of Malik Willis? Not to for sure give him the job of backup quarterback, but, Joe, do you think the Titans are legitimately considering making Malik Willis the number two as they factor in the different roster cuts they're going to have to make over the course of the next day?
It's a good question. I have to think it's at least a discussion, because those roster spots are I mean, there's a lot of position coaches on this staff right now saying, no, I need one more. I need one more. I really don't want to cut. Fill in the blank, you know. A Deshaun Hand.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Walker, a Tommy Hudson, you know, Des Fitzpatrick. We go up and down the list. So we need to keep another safety. We're not sure about the safety depth, so we got to keep another extra one. You know, I mean, that's part of this. So I got to think it's at least considered. I think, again, the question is, if you had to go in the middle of a game or start a game or two with either of those guys, what would your choice be right now? And I can make a case for Malik Willis to say, you know what, now you're coming in a pinch, maybe tougher, but okay, Malik Willis can still make more plays for you. You adjust your game plan accordingly if he has to start a game or two. If Tannehill has like a short-term injury and you still have the playmaking that gives you a chance, you can still run the ball. You still have that defense. I mean, it's not like he's been throwing the ball to the other team left and right. It's been more a question of just getting the ball out, right?
Yeah.
And he's gotten better. And if he keeps getting better, then why can't he be better than this a month from now? I mean, I'm making the case for him. But I still think that right now, at this moment, the operation, Vrabel uses that word all the time, you know, the operation, this or that. Still think at this time they have more confidence in Woodside, of course. I mean, Woodside's been here for years. I mean, that's one thing they know for sure. And probably doesn't hurt that he actually came out and executed and actually made football plays and looked like an NFL quarterback in his last glimpse. So that's still going to be my guess, is they keep three. Now, you can cut Woodside. That's another interesting thing here is, you know, Woodside could be on your practice squad, and you can still, even if Woodside's on your practice squad, you can still move things around, right? And you can, like, Willis can do scout team stuff. Woodside can be activated on a game day. Like, would he clear waivers? I think he would right now.
If I had to guess, yes.
So that could be the plan, too, is, you know what? Obviously, Malik Willis on the roster. That's not debatable. Malik Willis makes the roster. Cut Woodside, put him on waivers. Don't expect anybody to pick him up. And if they don't, then he's on your practice squad, and you have three guys still in the building without having to use that roster spot. I mean, I think that certainly could happen tomorrow.
Well, I said this on Friday. I thought it was important for Logan Woodside to get in the game and play well. Now, honestly, I'd probably like to see him play. Just personally, would have liked to have seen him play a little bit more than he did in the game on Saturday. But I understand that you're trying to get, you know, as deep of a look at Malik Willis as you can get if you're the Titans. But I thought it was important that he came in and played well. I mean, it's a 2-minute situation. It's late in the game, and he's able to lead you down the field and win the game. And, you know, it wasn't perfect, but 5-9, 43 yards. He makes a good instinctual play on fourth down to run the ball in. I mean, I thought it was good from Logan Woodside, and it's important, I thought, to see that, because the last two glimpses that we had gotten in game situations of Logan Woodside before that had not been good. And I thought it was important for him to come in and play well. And look, I'm not saying that they're basing their, you know, their decision to make him the number two quarterback on that last drive there, but I do think it's important for him to come into a game and play well. And the fact that he did that, albeit in a limited setting on Saturday, I think is very good for him in terms of what maybe the alternative would have been had he came in and stunk up the joint again for the third preseason game in a row.
Yeah, no doubt. It's confidence game, and I feel like he lost some, and who knows, maybe just rattled by that game one, you know, outing, and you know what's going on with Willis. I mean, it's a different situation for him. It's not taking on some veteran who's supposed to be better than him and beating him. It's, you know, the kid is here to stay. But that was a good last outing for him. Short, but effective. And now, of course, the other question with the Titans is, could they just look to, reportedly they worked out a QB, and could they do the whole try to find someone tomorrow, you know, on waivers? Now, keep in mind one thing, if you like read around the league, there's a whole bunch of teams saying that same thing. Like, I feel there's like 12 to 14 teams that are like, Mason Rudolph's gonna be out. Yeah. You know, so I mean, like it's slim pickings with most teams at QB2. And so, like, if a Gabbert or Rudolph, whoever's out there of interest, like, it's, you know, it's there's going to be a lot of interest in that too. But I mean, I the more I think about it, I really don't hate the cut Woodside and hope he clears waivers. I mean, why is any team out there gonna scoop him up? Now, remember Luke Falk, what, Vrabel's first year, the exact same thought was there. But I guess it was like because the Dolphins picked him up. I guess the Dolphins were like, we have no interest in you as a QB, but tell us everything you know about the Tennessee Titans who we're about to play. Like, right. That's all I could figure, you know? So I don't know. Maybe the Giants will just jump all over Logan Woodside and, you know, put him in a chair, put a spotlight on him and, you know, and just.
Logan, how do you tackle Derrick Henry? What's the best the best way to go about trying to tackle Derrick Henry?
Should we tackle him high or low, Logan? What do you think? I kind of like that idea, you know. Have him on the practice squad, and again, you can move things around once you have that. So, I don't know. That could be a nice kind of compromise.
By the way, as you pointed out a couple of days ago, the Titans did work out Kurt Benkert at quarterback as well, who former Green Bay Packer. So I saw him play, I think, a couple preseason games, and I think he got in for maybe one snap one time. So probably not much of an upgrade on Logan Woodside if it's Kurt Benkert that you're looking at.
A lot of illustrious names out there in the world of QB2.
Yes, no question about it. So I'm really interested to see what this looks like this week. I do think a likely scenario is what you've just thrown out there is we know that Malik Willis is going to be on the roster, and then maybe originally it looks like, you know, oh, they're moving Logan Woodside to the practice squad. You know, heading into game week, I wonder how they shuffle that around. And if there's, you know, an injury, is Woodside, even though he's technically on the practice squad, would he be the one that they call up to start the game? Like if Tannehill, you know, got hurt at the end of the Giants game and they need somebody to play against Buffalo. Like that to me is the interesting situation.
Right. And you can excuse me, bring him to the active roster, and then someone else at a different position goes, and maybe someone who you also wouldn't be too worried about someone scooping up on waivers. You could make that work, for sure. So, you know, that may not be a bad idea. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, I don't know the desperation of some of these teams. There are some bad situations at QB2, but I have a hard time believing that people are being a mad frenzy for Logan Woodside.
We'll continue the discussion.
And even if there is, like, it's not like the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, that is true.
You know?
That is true. We'll continue the discussion on the Titans and their preseason finale over the weekend. 26-23, the win for the Titans against Arizona, including a Treylon Burks sighting over the weekend as well. We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Your opinion, can a game like last night for Burks add to his, you know, confidence a little bit as he gets ready for the regular season?
Well, as far as confidence, I think you'd have to ask Treylon, but it was certainly really good for us to see and for our team to see and our coaches to see. Him play, have some good play speed, and his willingness to block, you know, when he was in there and do his job. So those are all positive things. As far as confidence goes, I think that would be an excellent question for him, but from the coaching standpoint, those were all, you know, really good things to see.
That was Mike Vrabel on Treylon Burks over the weekend. Treylon Burks, 3 catches, 33 yards, and a touchdown in the game for the Titans against the Arizona Cardinals. He did lead the game momentarily, but came back in there, and 3 catches, 33 yards, 1 touchdown on 3 targets. So 3 catches, 3 targets for Treylon Burks over the weekend as well. Joe, what did you make of Treylon Burks? Number one, his availability to be on the field, because that was in question heading into this game this past weekend. And number two, the performance of Treylon Burks in the game. How much of a boost do you think this can be for him heading into the regular season?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing, you know, for him to make some plays out there. And to be able to bounce back from the left leg, whatever exactly that was, then you're wondering about the hand wrist situation. But it seems like, you know, he should be fine for the opener. But yeah, I think the amount he played tells you again that you know, right now they're trying to get him as many reps as possible and find a role. And they're gonna, I mean, I think they're gonna have a role for him, but it's gonna be a specific role, and they're gonna try to scheme some things, I think, early in the season to you know, get the ball in his hands and let him make plays. And when I say that, I mean, that's just a little bit different than the top two receivers who are going to be out there in any situation. And, you know, I think whatever they're running, whatever they're doing, you know, Woods and Westbrook-Ikhine, they're confident they can go out and do it. I think Burks is going to be a work in progress in that regard. So, I think it would be a big deal for the Titans and a big deal for him for them to successfully scheme up some things and see what he can do, because you get him the ball in the open field, or you give him a chance in the red zone, give him a chance with a downfield shot. You know, he should be able to come to early in the season, make some kind of impact on this offense.
I'm interested to see what sort of situations early on they use him in. I mean, we've talked about this. You know, when they were with two tight ends out there, the two receivers are probably going to be Westbrook-Ikhine and Robert Woods. By the way, Robert Woods did play in this game. He got his one catch for 3 yards pretty early on, and that was all she wrote for Robert Woods. So I was a little surprised, I guess, to see him in there, but he was in there very briefly on Saturday before kind of giving way to the other receivers in the room. But I'm interested to see early on, you know, what are the different situations that you use Treylon Burks in? How many snaps is he going to get in week one against the Giants? And, you know, what do you want to do to get him the ball? Is it going to be a mixture of, you know, throwing, you know, bubble screens to him and getting the ball early to him? Are you going to go deep with him? Like, how are the Titans going to use him early on is going to be really interesting, because, I mean, the one thing that you will say about Treylon Burks, like, when he catches the ball, he's going to be very difficult to bring down just because of his size and speed that he brings to the table. So I don't anticipate at this point him getting a ton of snaps against the Giants, but when he does get them, I'm really interested to see how they use him and how they plan to get him the ball in that game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think they can do all the above, just in, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, if you clearly know what you're running here, you can run it, you know? And so I would look for a quick, like, again, a screen. Yeah, maybe one of the, you know, just the quick hitters, you know, like AJ Brown scored on and his, you know, little play action, little stick, and then boom, get it to him and see what he can do. And I mean, I think he'll be out there, and I bet you that it's somewhere in that neighborhood of 20 some snaps for him in the opener, which I know some people are like, first round pick, AJ Brown replacement, what are you talking about? But it's honestly, it's not like, even if Treylon Burks, let's say there was never any sort of, you know, conditioning question or time missing a spring, I mean, this could still be the case right now. And I think the one thing about it that is underrated, although I agree with people who say, like, Westbrook-Ikhine, you don't want him to be your wide receiver too, okay? I agree, but also part of the equation here is his continued improvement. I really think that he's going to be a good player for this offense this year, all year. Even if Burks ascends as they hope, I don't think that's just going to relegate Westbrook-Ikhine to the sidelines of special teams. I mean, he's become a good player. He's never going to be a game breaker, but he's become a good player, and he and Tannehill have really worked on that chemistry.
And then, Joe, you look around the rest of the receiving room on Saturday. I mean, Racy McMath, who is going to make the team, one catch for 27 yards. Des Fitzpatrick, two catches, 23 yards on 5 targets. Cody Hollister, 2 catches, 20 yards on 4 targets. Mason Kinsey, 3 catches, 18 yards on 7 targets. Like, Kinsey to me is the guy that, you know, with Kyle Phillips on the roster, it seems like he's just going to be the odd man out at this point. But if they decide to keep 6, and that's the way they go at wide receiver, is it Des Fitzpatrick? Is it Cody Hollister? Is it somebody else? Like, what do they end up doing with that number 6 wide receiver spot if they end up deciding to go that route. And I don't know, just for me personally, if I feel all that clear one way or the other about it after the game on Saturday for wide receiver number six.
Yeah, I don't either. And I definitely agree, like McMath, you know, is the fifth guy. And I've cooled off a little bit on McMath having a huge role, early, but I do think that they're still going to find some things for him in those games. And then anybody else who makes the team after those five is, I mean, kind of a throw-in, a, you know, depth add.
Oh, we went full Robo Joe.
I think it would be also. I could see five. I could see sticking with five. Okay, I'll just sit here until
we got him back. He's back now. Welcome back, Joe.
That's all right. I wasn't really making a good point anyway. Yeah, Dez would be my pick at six, but I'm not convinced that that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what they do on that side of things this week. Now, there was some news on Saturday night that I don't think is a huge surprise at this point, but John Robinson, Titans general manager, did confirm on the television broadcast as he was doing an interview throughout the third quarter, which it ended beautifully, if you've not seen this yet. I just said, basically at the end of it, hey, we haven't scored since I've been up here. I'm out of here. Dropped the mic, put up the peace sign, and walked out the door. It was awesome from John Robinson on the broadcast on Saturday. But he did say that Nicholas Petit-Frere is the starting right tackle for the Titans. So I don't think that's a huge surprise at this point. They moved Dylan Radins inside. He played at guard on Saturday for the Titans against Arizona. But I guess it is now official that Nicholas Petit-Frere is the starting right tackle for the Titans.
There was some debate over this, with wording. Actually, Gentry Estes came out and was like, well, he did say, what was it, maybe? He kind of won the right tackle job.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting way to put it. But I think that's still confirmation. That's just Robinson not wanting to just come out and, like, break news, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, who else is going to be at this point?
Exactly. Yeah, right. I mean, I know some people are like, well, it's going to be whoever they pick up tomorrow on waivers and plug them right in and yay, everything's better. But it's just not realistic that you're going to – I mean, it's realistic that they can pick somebody up for sure. But it's not realistic that anybody but him is going to start. So it's going to be a huge story for this team is his progress. I mean, frankly, I think Dylan Radins makes the team tomorrow, but he's a backup now. So we'll see if that comes into play. Petit-Frere is the guy, and I think there's some reason to be hopeful that he could become a good player and improve this year throughout the year and solidify you over there. There's hope.
There is hope, and Dylan Radins was inside this weekend, and, you know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I watched every snap that Dylan Radins played over the weekend, but he did have, you know, some penalty trouble, and I'm interested to see how that goes this week. I still think he's going to make the team. I think he'll be on the roster, but I am interested to see kind of how that goes and what the offensive line looks like. I still think there's a chance that maybe there could be an addition or two via waivers that takes place this weekend, because one thing that's been pretty consistent all preseason long, Joe, I thought it was consistent again. Once you start to get to the bottom part of that offensive line room, it's pretty bad. Like, they're getting caved in left and right, and they got caved in left and right all three preseason games.
Yeah, I think it speaks to, and the Titans are a great example of, they have too many defensive linemen, right? Like, not every team has this exact situation, but the Titans, I think it's more like this in the NFL. There are a lot more defensive linemen who you're like, ooh, wow, you know, that guy could really help us. And then on the other side, there's just a whole bunch of teams that are like, my gosh, we need three more offensive linemen to feel okay about our depth. There's a shortage of supply of quality offensive linemen relative to defensive linemen. So you get deep in those games, and a lot of times that's what you see. Teams getting caved in, and the Titans are right there with those teams, getting caved in.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. We'll also have your next opportunity to join the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We have five more opportunities for you to join the second annual Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League. Five more spots available, and we're giving away one of those spots right now. If you know the answer to this trivia question, hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. The first correct answer will be the newest member of the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League. And today's trivia question is this. The Titans selected Vince Young in the first round of the 2006 NFL Draft. There were two other quarterbacks taken in the 2006 NFL Draft first round. Who were the other two first-round quarterbacks not named Vince Young, taken in the first round of the 2006 NFL Draft? If you know the answer, hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, for me, this is an answer that I will never forget because I thought this draft class had the chance to be very, very good, and it was not. Although one of the two that we're looking for had a pretty good career.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know one for sure. I don't know the other one. But one of them, the one I know, was good. Good. Better career than Vince Young.
You'll know the other one. I just want to wait until the answer comes in. But you'll know the other one. Now he's talking on mute. The first mute of the day for Rexrod. I think good we have stuff. A winner on the text line.
Joey from Bellevue.
Joey from Bellevue, the winner on the text line. The two other quarterbacks outside of Vince Young, Jay Cutler and Matt Leinart of USC. Matt Leinart. Nice. Everybody thought Matt Leinart was going to be really, really good, and it was not a great NFL career for Matt Leinart.
How could I forget Matt Leinart? My goodness. Bigger disappointment than Vince Young, actually.
Yeah.
By quite a bit.
I mean, Vince Young, relatively speaking, was great compared to Matt Leinart in the NFL. So, we'll have four more opportunities for you to join the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League throughout the rest of this week. So looking forward to that. Joe, there's a couple other things from the Titans game the other night that I want to get to. Keith from Bowling Green on the text line asking about Joe Jones. I will say, like, I don't know if Joe Jones is going to make the team, and I don't know if he does what sort of a role he'll have. But, gosh, it's impressive watching that guy. Like, he is – I think Vrabel throws out the phrase, like, every blade of grass – he wants to see defended, and Joe Jones takes that literally. I mean, the guy is relentless out there in the preseason.
Yeah, had the big pursuit play the other night, and he's one of those guys who's just forced himself in the discussion. It's interesting because I think Chance Campbell has been pretty encouraging, you know, but he's a rookie, and obviously we haven't seen a glimpse of Monty Rice, and he's on PUP missing the first four games. But in the meantime, Jack Gibbons, Dr. Jack, as Vrabel calls him, I think has done a lot of good things, and so has Joe Jones. So it's like it's good depth in terms of in the preseason, a lot of guys making plays, working hard. Like, you got to like that as a coach, how hard they're working to make the team. And it's actually, I think, tough choices. I still wonder how much of a drop-off if you had to go to any of these guys. I think it'd be pretty steep. But it's interesting. I think Joe Jones can't just be ignored here, as hard as he's played, as many plays as he's made.
Yeah, no, he's been really good so far in the preseason. And then, of course, Joe, there is the battle at punter that we've talked a lot about, and it was pretty interesting on Saturday. I thought Stonehouse was really good on Saturday. I mean, he bombed a couple, and he put, you know, a couple inside the 20, which is what you're really looking for from him. Can he execute kind of the shorter punts and the directional punting, and, you know, not just booting it through the back of the end zone? And, you know, they gave Stonehouse a good look on Saturday. And Brett Kern, after the game on Saturday, was, I don't want to say was just totally, like, resigned himself to the fact that he wasn't going to get the job, but he certainly, I think, realizes that it's a very open competition and that there is a chance that Stonehouse might be the punter for the Titans. It was a pretty, I guess, reflective, maybe the right word, Brett Kern on Saturday night after the game. Uh-oh, I think we've got frozen Rex.
Yeah.
No, he's back.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to huddle up near the router here. I think Kern. I'd be the same way as Kern. You know, I'd be like, that's the worst, and you hope for the best. I don't know that Kern's right if he really thinks that, but it's a fascinating situation because Stonehouse is just. It just can bomb the ball. Now, you know, his net punting was only 41-3 in 11 punts. And that tells you, I mean, net punting, that's really the stat that matters. And if he had five touchbacks out of his 11 punts, that's the question. Like, situationally, are you better this year with Brett Kern? I think you can make the case that you are. And if you believe this team can be special, then do you not? I mean, you're not going to be able to flip the field. You know, you're at your own 17, and Stonehouse might totally flip the field and put them at their own 20, okay? And that is a heck of a weapon. But is that more valuable than Kern's ability to accurately put it deep in the opponent's end, especially when you're more around plus territory? I don't know. But again, the bigger question is also, it's this year, where are you better? I would argue Kern still. I would argue that weapon he is still more valuable than Stonehouse and what he does. Excuse me. But again, as we've talked about, Stonehouse might be a monster punter in this league for the next decade. And you got him right now. Then someone else will have him immediately when you cut him.
Well, they will. And, you know, just from the leg alone, I'd be shocked, you know, even before this past week, if the Titans were to cut him, that he would make it through and that they'd be able to have him on the practice squad. You know, Matt Araiza got released over the weekend by Buffalo, so you add that to the mix as well. Like, there's, to me, I don't know if it's 100% chance, but I go about 95% that Stonehouse gets picked up by somebody if you cut him. So that's really the question. Like, I think Stonehouse showed himself really well in the preseason, and if the Titans decided to keep him and move on from Kern, I'd understand it. Like, it'd be tough. I mean, Brett Kern's a guy that's been around since 2009 and has been a great punter. Like, I've joked about it before, but I'm kind of serious. Like, there were probably some years where he was their best player, and I'm not joking. And that's as much a compliment to him as it is an indictment on the rest of the roster. But, you know, I think there is a legitimate chance that in the next day, the Brett Kern era in Nashville could be over. And then the question is, like, you know, if it is and they move on from Brett Kern, does he keep playing? Does he go somewhere else? Because I think, obviously, he's still good enough to be a pretty high-level punter in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he'd be picked up. I don't know. I'm not totally up on every team's punting situation, but I still think he's good enough that he would end up somewhere. Absolutely. So, yeah, you're gonna lose one of these guys, and it's really, really interesting to see how they look at it. If they believe that Stonehouse can come close to what Kern does in terms of being precise, then I think it's pretty simple. But I don't know about that. Look, Kern. It's not like Kern has had a bad preseason. He's stepped up too. He just does not have the cannon this guy has right now.
Yeah, and I tell you what, that cannon, and it feels like around the league, there are more and more guys like that coming in. Like, there have been some young punters in the league in the preseason that have just absolutely booted the ball, and it's been interesting to watch how that happens. So how do the Titans value that? You know, we got some people on the text line asking if they could keep two punters. They're not going to keep two punters, and they're probably not going to trade a punter to the Bills either at this point for alignment. I don't think that's going to happen, so probably just going to have to lose one of them and then watch them go somewhere else and punt the ball really well, be that Stonehouse or be that Kern.
Yeah, that's the reality of the position and an NFL roster. They're not keeping two. That's one thing. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to do the QB thing. I'm sure how they're going to do the punter thing. They're going to cut one of them, and they're going to lose that guy.
We'll continue the conversation. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get into Vanderbilt's big win against Hawaii coming up next as well. I got a four-pack of tickets and two unlimited ride wristbands to the Nashville Fair to give away. Be caller number 3, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The Nashville Fair will be at the Nashville Fairgrounds Friday, September 9th through Sunday, September 18th. There'll be rides, agriculture, arts, livestock competitions, and fair food, including some hot chicken on a stick and deep-fried Goo Goo clusters as well. Caller number 3, 615-737-1025. A four-pack of tickets and two unlimited ride wristbands to the Nashville Fair. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.